Hey, what's up, creators? This episode is brought to you by OmniSend, the powerhouse behind email and SMS marketing that truly sells. Imagine transforming your pop-ups, newsletters, and even those abandoned carts into real sales opportunities, all while optimizing your budget. Last year alone, OmniSend merchants made a whopping $72 for every dollar spent on their email and SMS marketing campaigns. That's the kind of efficiency and effectiveness we all strive for. So if you're ready to see your numbers soar too, start for free and discover how OmniSend can revolutionize the way you connect with your audience. Visit your.omnisend.com/KDWD. Again, that's your.omnisend.com/KDWD to kickstart your journey to selling more stuff with less hassle. Don't miss out on making every message count. Try OmniSend today. Hey there, it's Kim Doyle, and welcome to my show, where digital marketing meets real stories, experiences, and strategies. You'll get a behind-the-scenes look at what's working and not working in my business, as well as other experts who show up and share their stories. As much as I love talking about tangible marketing principles and tactics, we'll dig a little deeper with mindset and explore what's required to create a business you love on your terms that also supports your life. I want to help you understand the why behind the how. Whether you're a seasoned marketer or just dipping your toes in, remember, marketing is a journey and the goal is to enjoy it. My desire is to guide you on your journey and remind you that no matter what life throws at you, you've got this. Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Kim Doyle Show. I, of course, am your host, Kim Doyle, and I am recording on hopefully what is one of the last rainy, gray, cold days here in Northern California. Today is episode 137. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to the five-part series, Everything is Content, that was the previous five episodes. So I hope you get a chance to listen to those. All right. So today's episode is called Someone Has to Go First, Let It Be You. Now, again, guys, I am testing. This is only if you're watching any way, shape, or form a video, but I'm testing. I have this that's not a tripod. It's a holder for my webcam so that when I can repurpose these videos, I want to make sure I'm looking at the camera. So it's weird. It's not like up on my monitor. I'm looking directly at it. So I'm going to figure out the right system here eventually. And then, of course, this will all change when I get back to Costa Rica in a few months, probably. Anyway, all right. So the episode title, Somebody Has to Go First. Like, I heard this. I don't actually remember where I read it or heard it initially, but the second I read it, it completely struck a nerve with me. I'm one of those people, yes, I love quotes and inspiration a lot because of the feelings that those quotes or inspirational sayings, whatever, you know, the feeling they induce within me, right? Which is ideally what we want any copy, content, sentence to induce, and induce, I don't know if that's the right word. And there's something there, but whatever, you guys get the point. All right. So anyways, I wrote it down though, probably a month ago, because I knew, I'm like, this is a perfect podcast episode. But before we do that, I want to do a quick recap and a little bit of a catch up with you, because I'm kind of tripping out that we're almost halfway through March. You know, I was thinking back to when I did the year in review post in January when I decided just move back to Costa Rica. And I was like, oh, I had 7 months to do that. And now all of a sudden, it's like, holy moly. Well, I guess it would have been 6 months. It's July 1st. Anyways, but the point being, time is flying, right? I think I say this every year though. So that's fine. All right. Now, keep in mind, I'm not complaining because I do not realize how much the weather impacts me until I have beautiful blue skies and sunshine. And it just feels like all is right in the world, right? Anything is possible. And so, yeah, that's why I had to start this out with, hopefully this is one of the last cold, rainy days in Northern California here. Especially when I look at the weather in Costa Rica and it's like mid 90s. In beautiful blue skies. That's all right. Anyways, I'm going to do a full breakdown of the Everything is Content everything, okay? Because I feel like I've been a little bit quiet lately because I've been very head down with that. And like I said, those five episodes or the previous five episodes, and they were shorter episodes, right? And I think I'd like to intermix shorter episodes with some of the long form content, which I would love to hear your thoughts on that. But you, that was one of those where I had already done the videos. So I was recording and, transcribing. Let's go ahead and slow our roll a little bit, right? I've only had one coffee today, but where I was taking the audio and created a podcast with those five episodes, the five videos. Best laid plans. The first three went out on time, and I won't go too sideways with what happened, but long story short, they're out, they're up, they're published, okay? And I'm going to do a full breakdown probably next month because I'll have more updates for you. But based on everything is content, I want to share with you guys a little piece of what this one inspired idea became, right? So it started out as a five-part email series that came to me via inspiration on a Sunday when I was stuck. And then I published those emails as a video, and then I turned them into podcast episodes, like I said. I am republishing the series on Medium. I have hosted my first live workshop for Everything is Content. It went great. I love doing stuff live because the interaction and the engagement and the feedback is priceless. And I took the five-part email series and I published it as a kind of epic blog post. It's about 4,500 words on the site. And then I compiled that into a PDF as a lead magnet. Okay. And so all of this, I'm sharing all of this because this is all part of a long-term strategy. And hot damn if it isn't working, okay? The gas is about to be poured on using Laurel Portier's $5 a day ad strategy. And I am super excited to see how this all unfolds. So that being said, I will share all of this with you probably in a month from now when I have a little bit more data, okay? Because this is really, I'm trying to deploy patience here. And like I said, I'm in this for the long term. And so I want to see how I can take something that was one thing initially and repurpose it effectively and correctly, not just repurpose and push the same thing everywhere. All right. So, and YouTube is coming. I feel like I've been threatening to get my YouTube channel up for a while. Back up, right? I did a lot of WordPress videos back in the day. And here's the thing, this little off script. But you guys are, you know how I roll, right? So what has hit me recently is this pivot towards vanity metrics. Now, I understand that subscribers on YouTube is a little bit more than a vanity metric. Probably the likes and the comments are more vanity metrics. Although comments, I would think, are much more indicative of the value if they're engaging comments. In terms of you're on the right track, right? Likes and stuff. I don't know, you guys. I don't know the weight any of this carries. And even with YouTube, I'm really not interested. I don't care about getting a YouTube plaque. Would it be great? Yeah, but let's see. Let's see how that goes when I get back into YouTube and whether or not I decide that's a platform I want to maintain, right? And push. But at the end of the day, the metrics that measure to me are email subscribers and sales, really, you know? And so there's a massive freedom that comes from having to grow these big, huge platforms and channels when, yes, if the bigger the audience, the more likely, keep that in mind, the more likely you are to have conversions. But there was a story of, I think it was a TikToker who had a couple hundred thousand followers and went to sell t-shirts and nada, nothing, couldn't sell one t-shirt. You know, so it really is about the right content to the right people and then making sure that call to action inspires them to engage with you a little bit more. Okay, that was all off script. So let's see how long this is going to go. All right. I want to share a little bit of the personal stuff that's been going on, and it's not super long, so heads up on that. But I shared that I'm going to be moving back to Costa Rica this summer in a previous episode, and obviously I talked about a little bit at the beginning of this. And I really do think that that's why I'm tripping out, that it's mid-March. But of course, I'm getting more and more excited to go back. I just published, and I should link to it. I published a new post only on Medium, and it's why I'm moving back to Costa Rica a year later, which technically it's more like a year and a half closer to that. But I made the decision just under the 1 year mark back in California. And for what it's worth, this is all a move towards, not away from. The too long don't read if you want it. The TLDR, I don't know why I had to say that out loud. Like, I think you guys get that. But is the I like the quality of my life there. I could not decide where I wanted to be here. I kept thinking about different places that would keep me close enough to family, but were a city or an environment that I wanted to be in. I don't want to go closer to the Bay Area. The other direction is kind of above Sacramento. There's, I don't know. I think there's like, there's how many millions of people are there? A couple million in Sacramento. I mean, there's just so many people everywhere in California, and it's always going to be home. My family's here. I have dear friends here, but the place, I actually got my place back. I think I may have shared this, but the same place I had, which I'm beside myself, that place in California would probably be $7,000 to $10,000 minimum to be that close to the beach with the view, with just the space, all of it. So, you know, the money I'm saving by being in Costa Rica just means more flights home if I want, right? That's kind of how I'm looking at it. Plus, the biggest thing, like I said, it is the quality of life. And like I said, you can follow me on Medium. I'm just Kim Doyle, I think it's lowercase. You'll find me. But I go into the whole story and reason behind that, right? But here's the other thing. There's a lot to do in the meantime, because my dad has also decided he's going to list his house for sale and kind of see what happens with this, which is great. He's moving down to Brentwood, which is where, that's the plan anyway, where I raised my kids. My sister lives in Brentwood. My brother's in a city right next to Brentwood. And then he's about 10 minutes from his medical and healthcare, right? Right now, he is a trek. And and the interesting thing about this house where my parents, I think this is the longest home they had, right? From growing my childhood, blah, blah, blah. And it's beautiful, right? He's on an acre. It's back off the street, private driveway, all this kind of stuff. But all of the homes up here are custom built. And so, meaning there's no, I don't know how you do comps. Fortunately, I have a dear friend who was a friend of my sister's from high school. She's amazing in real estate, came up here. So long story short, we are getting the house ready to list for sale, which means packing, decluttering, cleaning, all that kind of stuff. My dad and I have already started the process. My siblings are coming up to help. And so there's just, it's going to be a busy few months. And so I've sort of accepted that. But the show must go on. And between you and me, right? I'm kind of hoping I'm not here for the actual move. I've done so much moving in the past 5 years that I wouldn't mind skipping one of these, right? Although I'll be doing a lot of packing and preparing once he has an offer on the house. And who knows, maybe he'll decide he doesn't want to sell. I don't know. We'll see. I'm really hoping he does, because after 3 trips to the ER last year, he will be 80 this year. I think it is imperative that he be closer. All right. So bonus 2 of moving back to Costa Rica is all I have to do is take my clothes, my dog, my computer, maybe some decor, which all of that's going to probably that might be multiple trips. Let's just say that, right? Because the airlines have also upped the cost of luggage, whatever. So I'll be going on there probably 7 or 8 bags, whatever. It is what it is. Okay. And yes, I'm going to haul another mattress down there. I had a friend do it for me last time, but it looks like that is on me, but that's fine. All right. I think we're all cut up now. Cut up, caught up. So let's talk about, let's get into someone has to go first. This, what struck me about this is that we're in this time, right, where it feels, and of course this is not the case, but it feels like everything has been done or been said, or, you know, there's plenty of people talking about this, and we're going to get into all of that, which ties into knowledge bias and imposter syndrome. But somebody has to go first. It's not so much about being first to market or first to adopt, although I think first to adopt kind of comes into play here. And I'm talking more about how this relates to content and the creator economy as we know it today. Now, this is going to go across the board, whether you are a coach, a creator with digital products, you're a course creator maybe, or an agency, or just a small business, okay? As long as you're doing business on the internet, I do feel this applies to you because we get it. Content is part of being online. Unless, again, you have really deep pockets and are great at advertising. You can go that direction too, right? But even then, you still need to know how to create compelling content in the terms of ads and headlines and follow-up messages and email and all of that, okay? So, you know, of course, you know, when I was getting started, again, 2008, you guys, 16 years this year, that kind of blows me away. Wow. I really need to get a new, I think I'm looking at a new microphone, wholly off script, that has a lower profile arm. And it's not so easy to hit with my hands as I talk and record. Anyway, when I was getting started, it sort of felt like everybody was new to the online marketing space. And we were all sort of figuring it out as this collective. Now, of course, there were direct response marketers who were much more seasoned and had been doing this. 2008 was not the beginning of social media or internet marketing. I get that. Everything still felt very, very new. And a lot of those direct response marketers brought their offline skills online. But for the most part, it all felt fairly new. And, you know, social media was new. Blogging was still new. I think WordPress was only a few years old at the time. I'd have to double check that. Blogger was a big one at the time. And so earning a living online kind of felt like the Wild West, like anything is possible. I think it's time we pretend. Okay, let's start pretending that it's those early days again. I shared this in a recent, my workshop that I did for Everything is Content. And do you guys remember when, if you were on social back in 2008, that Facebook would prompt you and say, I think it was, what are you doing? Or what are you up to? Or something like that. And I would answer the question like I was talking directly with Facebook. I would say, is doing, is going, is taking, is off to pick up my son. Like it was, you know, and I see this because Facebook is sending me these memories every day. And I'm just thinking, that is hysterical. That is hysterical. At the same time, there was no fear. Ignorance was really bliss. There was no fear of, is this the right hook, the right headline, the right copy? Am I talking to the right people? We just showed up. And, you know, and obviously I shouldn't speak for the collective we, but that's how it felt. I know. I just showed up and I just did not think so hard about it. And which is kind of where knowledge bias comes in. And the point of going back to those early days is not because of AI, which I love and adore and have fully embraced, saturated markets or pay-to-play social, or even the algorithms, right? It's because of the massive amounts of information at our fingertips, it feels like somebody is already doing what we want to do, or everyone already knows what we know. Excuse me. And I'm going to assume I'm not the only one with those thoughts. Okay. So bear with me as I continue on with the collective we. Okay. This is how I decided to bring back Everything is Content. I created that phrase, like I said before, in 2016, I think is when I came up with that. I really started using it in 2018. And I taught a couple workshops on Everything is Content. And we used it with the first content planner brand. And after we closed that brand, I wasn't really sure what direction I was going in. My focus has always been on digital marketing, content marketing, and in the last few years, also brought in email and newsletter. I love email. It is the only thing I regret not starting sooner. I'll just go ahead and say that right now. But I really felt, I think what happened with Everything is Content for me is that, or content marketing in general, because I kind of pivoted to focus primarily on email newsletters, is that I felt very split between my personal brand and the content planner brand, you know? And then I launched another content planner, which I still have it. I really have not decided. That's going to be a whole other episode on what to do with that. But I do think I would like to be out of the e-commerce space. It's just, it takes a different level of energy and thought process. And I don't feel that that's my purpose, honestly, in this lifetime. And so what was happening is like, I felt like here I'd been creating content about content, I know, but on Kim Doyle, and now I have a content planner brand. And so it was always kind of like, am I cannibalizing one for the other? And my personal brand obviously was here a good 10 years before we launched that. No regrets and not complaining. But you know, that just sharing where the lack of clarity came from for me. And then I came across Dan Coe's video, which I did a whole podcast episode, and it was, "You Are the Most Profitable Niche." And it felt like, finally, somebody else is saying what I have been thinking for years. That was kind of what Everything is Content is all about, in that, you know, this idea that you're supposed to pick a niche and I'm going to double down on that is great if that works for you. Okay. And I've actually decided that I'm not anti-niche. I'm anti-only niche. Okay. Don't think you should only talk about just your niche. And so then I start seeing content like this, and I have to, like, I'm squeezing my eyeballs around the camera here, but this was part of my workshop. So I've got four screenshots. So go to the post if you can. There was a screenshot from Jamie Northrup, Minimalist Hustler, which, follow him, adore him, great guy doing incredible things. But he shared something, and it said, "The biggest mistake I made when trying some side hustles was deciding to do it the way I was told to do it by different gurus or creators." Right? Okay. Then, of course, we've got Dan Coe's Most Profitable Niche Is You, Create Your Niche of One. And that video that he published a year ago now has 456,000 views. And for what it's worth, you guys, this is where I also realized why I'm probably leaving a lot on the table to not be doing YouTube. I mean, Dan just sits there and he's very monotone, not judging, right? He works hard, you can tell by his content, whatnot, but he just sits and talks directly at the camera. There's no fancy editing. There's no exciting, you know, it's him sitting there. So there is a market for everyone, and everyone, there's an audience for what you have. Okay. Two more niche things. Kendall Summerhawk, this was an email from her. She's kind of an OG in the marketing space, and is a money coach for women, and she coaches other women on how to use her system. So basically, you can kind of white label her coaching, which is brilliant, does certifications. Anyways, her email subject line was, "No niche required. Here's why you can skip it." And then in the same email, she says, "Declare that you're going to coach women entrepreneurs. That's it. Your niche is done." So, hallelujah. Okay. And last one was Kieran Drew, who is a writer, was a dentist, pivoted to the creator economy just 3 years ago, and now has multiple six-figure business through writing. So note, if you don't want to do video or podcasting or, you know, put your face out there so much, his subject line was, "Ain't got no niche, ain't got no problems." So that's just validation for me. Okay. And who knows, I'm sure there's an element of awareness happening here, you know, kind of like when you buy a new car and then you see that car everywhere on the road again. So, I am calling this my anti-only niche stance, kind of like my almost daily emails, because I've started seeing this everywhere now. And I also think that people are connecting that when you kind of, I don't want to say, narrow your focus to a niche, because I'm not saying you shouldn't, but I think there's an element of needing to bring you into it. Otherwise, it's not fun. It's hard to sustain. And how many things can you say about the same thing unless you're in an industry or a market that's constantly changing? And there's always growth and opportunities, right? Pretty much in any niche, I should say. So it depends on, actually, this was a little light bulb moment. And if you're watching the video, you could probably see that in my face. I think it depends on what it is you want to create. Meaning, are you creating something because, God forbid, you don't want to create a, you know, multi-million dollar business? I do, but if I don't, would I be okay with like high six figures? Yeah, totally, right? I saw this other quote the other day that said, "I wish you enough." And I think it's redefining enough. Enough could mean plenty of surplus in the bank for you. Enough could mean more time. Enough could mean, you know, 1 week off a month, whatever it is, which is more time, but you know what I mean. All right. So, you know, at the end of the day, none of this really matters. What matters is that this is all changing the content game. And I, for one, am here for all of it. Okay. So here's what's getting in your way. The biggest thing that I see getting in people's way is knowledge bias. So I'm going to read the definition via Google of what knowledge bias is. All right. Man, I cannot wait for the little bit of humidity that exists in Costa Rica compared to here. All right, here's the definition. The curse of knowledge or the curse of expertise is a cognitive bias where we incorrectly assume that everyone knows as much as we do on any given topic, or a given topic, I should say. Knowledge bias is something that I know has totally gotten in my way, okay? And here's the kicker with knowledge bias. It's usually accompanied by imposter syndrome. It's more annoying friend, I should say. And you guys, I just recommend go to the post because I made a fun little image with Dolly through ChatGPT. And I just had this image come to me. One thing, here we go. You guys, this is what happens when I haven't like recorded live, right? Instead of pre-recording and stripping audio. I am on a mission to pull more visual metaphors. And there's a couple courses that I want to take. I don't know if I'll hit it this year, but maybe next year, on drawing with like Procreate and the iPad to create visual metaphors for storytelling. I think it's incredibly powerful. Anyways, the image that I did as I was writing this, I saw these two little fuzzy monsters, right? I wanted them to be friendly. One is knowledge bias and one is imposter syndrome, and they're friends and they're like strolling down the road. And so the prompt that I'd given Dolly was, I explained all of that. And I said, make them happy, fun friends that are, you know, fuzzy and they look fluffy, you know, from Minions. It's so fluffy. And I said, do it in a Pixar style image. And they're awesome. I love my little monsters. I have more fun with that. Excuse me. And I haven't even gotten into Midjourney, you guys. Anyways. All right. So the thing with knowledge bias is that it causes us to undervalue our skills, our knowledge, and our expertise, believing that they're not valuable enough, or that what we want to present isn't as good as what other people are presenting. Imposter syndrome has us feeling like we're not skilled or knowledgeable enough to contribute. So you can kind of see how they go hand in hand. Talking about both here is a perfect example. So as an example, perfect example as example, okay? Gosh, you guys, I feel like I'm new to talking today. Obviously, plenty of people have written about both of these things. I don't know, you know, there's a lot of creators who have talked about imposter syndrome. They've all felt it at one time or another. And it is very real. I had a woman I met in Costa Rica. Imposter syndrome isn't real. I'm like, because you decided so? But there's actual science and data, and there's psychologists who have said it exists. Anyways, that's a little snark for towards her. Anyhow, can I say, you guys, I'm human. but there are plenty of people who have written and created content about both. I could have very easily decided that I don't have enough to say on either, or assumed that someone else has said it better. And the latter is very possible, okay? Has someone said it better? Sure. Depends on what better is to you. Better is very subjective, isn't it? So the question is then, but to whom? Whom have they said this to? Who are they creating content for? Who are they talking to? And so it's the other thing you want to think about is that we're basing our knowledge bias and imposter syndrome on the idea that anyone who is listening to, reading, watching, whatever, consuming our content has the exact same experience as I do, right? So I'm assuming that all of these people who are listening or reading or engaging with this content have read the exact same things I've read on knowledge bias or imposter syndrome. Do you see what I mean? And so it's like, it's kind of like when you publish social content. It would be so great if everybody on every platform saw everything you published all the time. But, you know, no. You had a better chance of that, you know, like 10 years ago when social didn't feel like it's just marketing. And I know it's still social, guys. I don't want to go sideways on social, but you get the point. All right. So it's kind of ludicrous when you realize what our minds do to us that prevent us because of fear, the things that get in our way from saying and speaking and creating our own truths. You know, like you guys, you know that I like to do a lot of the intangible stuff. I wanted to be a motivational speaker. I really did. I spoke at my high school graduation. I've talked about this a bunch of times. It's not a surprise then that I have a podcast and love doing this. And so those things speak to me. But I've doubted myself. Do I need more tangible, concrete content? You know, it's like you look at the newsletter space, and I do more it's kind of a mix between tangible and intangible, but I try to remind people that it's possible that you can do this, right? That there is an element of motivation, but from a heart-centered place, you know, like I think I'm going to write a post called The 1980s Called and They Want Their Motivation and Successories Back. There was literally a story, you guys, called Successories. And anybody Gen X and older is probably going to remember this, but where you, there were posters you could buy and they were photos of, you know, like a rowing crew. They'd be out in the water and it was about, and it was determination, right? Excuse me. But literally there was a whole store called Successories. I think we're at a very pivotal point, honestly, on the planet and in time and in history where, you know, there's a lot going on where we're realizing systems are broken. Capitalism isn't working the way that I think some people wanted it to. And I won't go political here, I promise. So I think there's a shift. And I think that's why, you know, nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. I'm going to keep repeating that quote because that's what I feel about everything as content. All right. So here's an example of this in full action, okay, real life example. I had a call last week with a woman who had subscribed to my newsletter because she sent me an email and we had a bunch of exchanges and I'm like, do you want to hop on a call? And she is my ideal customer, client, avatar, whatever you want to call it, right? But so let me read you this email. And I trust myself when it comes to, do you want to have a call? And this is from the person, you guys, who, like, I always feel fueled after calls, but I also love seeing no calls on my calendar. It's a total dichotomy. I get it. I do love people. Anyways, her name is Kelly. And so, Kelly, if you're listening, shout out. I hope you realize that you've also inspired me, and I appreciate you taking the time to email and share your thoughts with me. Kim, I love your newsletter. I'm so grateful I stumbled on you while searching for ideas to start my own business towards the end of last year. I appreciate how real you are in your newsletters, the approach you take in business, and the guidance you share on living a happy life. You inspire me in every email. It feels like we're BFFs because of how you share your thoughts and feelings. Thank you for putting yourself out there and inspiring my belief that I really will be able to start my own business. I'm rooting for you and for your success. Three little heart emojis. Thank you, Kelly. You guys, that made my day. And you think we never get tired of hearing that we've touched someone's heart, right? That's what fuels me the most. That's why it's so imperative and so important to me to pull the intangible into everything I do. And, you know, I've had this conversation with my therapist / mentor of almost 21 years. And, you know, she reminds me, Kim, you've been paying me for intangible for a long time. And so, you know, they're not mutually exclusive, I guess is what I want to say with that. Okay. So let's circle back a little bit and talk about overcoming knowledge bias. And I promise this all comes back into, you know, someone has to go first. So someone has to be the first one. And even if you're not the first on the planet or in history, be the first to take that step because you may inspire someone like Kelly in your own space, right? So what do you do about knowledge bias? I'm going to quote the author, Susan Jeffers here, who has a book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And I know that's not super helpful. So let's get a little bit more specific. So I want to remind you that unique perspectives matter. We all have our own experiences, knowledge, and interpretations of those experiences. You know, I was thinking about this as I'm in a handful of expat Facebook groups in Costa Rica and for the area that I lived in. And there was a couple that I had met down there. They'd been down there like 15 years. They're back in Florida. And I saw a post of his and he said, no regrets, don't miss it at all, right? That's his perspective. So they had a very different perspective. They were also down in Costa Rica a lot sooner than I am and have probably seen massive changes. At the same time, I remember going to the vet for the first time with my dogs down there. And there was a woman from the States who was going in to get her shots to fly back with her dogs to the States. And I'm like, oh, how long have you been here? And she's like, 7 months. I'm like, how'd you like it? I don't. I was like, oh, okay. You know, and so we all bring different perspectives to the table, right? So what might seem obvious to one person can be a mind-blowing experience to another. It is vitally important that you value your own experiences. Okay. I don't know if we're ever going to get through this episode because stories just keep popping up. I actually wrote an email this morning that I published to Medium too. I've talked about Laurel Portier's $7 a month Facebook coaching, Facebook ads coaching group. Okay. It's all on Facebook ads. She has a very different, unique system that I don't see any other ad people teaching and talking about. And I love it because she's all about creating $5 a day ads for the long term, to have conversations, to gather data, to build a list. She calls it an invisible list of people who have engaged with your content, and then that you can make offers to, right? But they start seeing you. There's an awareness element that's happening here. Anyway, so she does these things called a blitz, and the blitz is a 3-day blitz. It's $100, and you get the first 3 ads up. Excuse me, there's training in the morning, and there's a group of people. You get feedback on your copy. You deploy the ad, right? Done. And so I had been wanting to do it. I actually did get the ads up just a few weeks ago. It's not doing super great. And I know exactly why, and that's another podcast episode. But for $5 a day, I'm like, okay, let's let it get a little more traction here, because still those people that have liked it or watched a little bit are connecting. Anyway, so I was watching what she did. Is this is the end of the March, this blitz. She's not doing one in April. And she sent us the blitz from January. So we get to watch the recordings, and there's homework, and you can kind of get ready. So come the March blitz, when we're live, that we can deploy it. And by the way, you guys, I have to get up and be on camera at 6 o'clock in the morning for these. Oh, I will not miss being in a central time zone versus Pacific, because we're behind everybody. Anyway, she shared the power. Okay. And this was my mind-blowing experience. We're still on unique perspectives, you guys. And she was talking about, and I'm paraphrasing here, it was a sentence though that literally just said, the difference. Okay. So the first one was, you know, easy for me to remember. The first sentence was something along the lines of, let me help you create your Facebook ads using my $5 a day ad strategy. Okay. As an example, that's not it. But the correct one that targeted her right audience was, let me help you fix your Facebook ads. So we went from let me help you create to let me help you fix. One is someone who's starting ads. One is somebody who is running ads, is familiar with the platform and doesn't need a lot of that. Now, mind you, you can be new to ads and still do her stuff. But the point that was fascinating was like, oh my God, duh, like mind blown. And you guys, I've read copy, I've used tools, I've had other coaches. It's like, oh my God, this is why I'm so adamant that the more time and energy you put into learning to write well, content, copy, the better you're going to do in business. Anyways, but that little perspective blew my mind. Okay. So your perspective can blow someone else's mind, is my point. All right. So the long tail of interest. Okay. This is the next point. And again, we're still talking about overcoming knowledge bias. You guys, there's 738 billion people on the planet. So there's plenty to go around. And there's such a huge reach. There is most likely your audience that you can serve with the thing you're passionate about. What is the bigger problems? Where is most people drop the ball in promoting their stuff? But let go of that. Let go of everybody's talked about this. Everybody's talked about that. Nobody has done it the way you do it. Okay. Learning, the last one for the knowledge bias piece is learning or practicing in public. You guys, this is some of the easiest to content to create. And I get the build in public, and I'm really not here to argue one over the other. I think they're all incredible. One, build in public, though, will always imply to me, I'm creating this thing to launch at the end of this. Practicing in public means I'm going to just start publishing content and start gathering data and start learning. I'm going to start learning about this thing and share the journey. There's not necessarily an endpoint, okay? You can't get it wrong if you learn or practice in public, and you're never done. That's it. You're just never done. So sharing the learning process is just as valuable as sharing expert knowledge. And so let go of thinking, oh, well, won't this turn off potential clients or customers if they know that I'm still learning this thing? No, it makes you relatable and trustworthy. And the thing is, we are all usually, you know, a couple steps ahead of someone, and there's multiple hundreds and thousands of someones out there. Okay. So let's take Mr. Beast for an example. And you guys, I linked to an article about how he got his start. In confession, I've never actually watched any of his videos. I have, however, heard enough people talk about him. And the first time I think I heard a little bit more of a story was listening to Dr. Benjamin Hardy's book, Be Your Future Self Now. He opens it when he tells the story of Mr. Beast recording a video from his future self, where he's saying, it was from his future self talking about, boy, I hope by this, you know, I've now got 100,000 subscribers and I hope I was able to do this in this amount of time, whatever. Long story short, it's this future projection, right? Because you have to, I'm a big mindset person and I believe language matters. And so being able to envision the growth that he wanted for his YouTube channel. Mr. Beast bet on himself. He went from doing a little bit with his YouTube channel, like during high school, he was posting uninspiring gaming videos and became a worldwide phenomenon. I think his net worth is 500 million. He's got, did I want to say, maybe that article, I could be totally wrong, guys, but I want to say he's got like 200 employees. There are 200 people that run the Mr. Beast engine now. And again, you don't have to want to be as big as him. I certainly don't. I don't have the desire or energy, but you do have to bet on yourself. And so how all of this applies to someone has to go first is that once you have been in business for a while, it's very easy to get caught up in the trap of the same. We do the same things as our peers, our coaches and creators whose products we've purchased are doing. Like we see what other people are doing and it's like, oh, I better do that. If it worked for them, we should be able to apply the exact same strategies and get the same results. Wrong. Okay. Solid marketing strategies work, especially when you apply them with the intention of creating and gathering data. Okay. Like, so meaning, here's another example. So you guys have probably heard of Jeff Walker, product launch formula. It's been around forever. And I think most people see it coming a mile away now. And I don't know that it's as effective because the market's matured. People know what a launch is. Now they see it. The thing is, if you don't have an audience yet, applying the product launch formula, unless you're buying traffic, which I don't know, maybe he does at this stage, talk about paid traffic. But if you don't have an audience, you're not going to get the same launch. If you don't really know how to write compelling copy and make sure that you've written a compelling, created an offer, the right offer, you know, it's you're not going to get the same results. And so it's, there are strategies that work, but the strategies are the fundamentals, just like any industry, right? Copywriting, just writing. I'm just going to keep preaching. Learn to write well. And the only way to do it is to practice. And if you hate me for that, I'm sorry, but it comes across the board, even with video. You guys, it's kind of like, look how many times I've gone off script. And believe it or not, I do have a full written post. It's like 2,200 words. And that's to keep me on point. This though, the off script, the energy is my personality. That's why I do think I should be doing more video, right? And why I'm recording this on video. But fill in the blank just doesn't work. This is my biggest pet peeve about writing templates. Using formulas that worked for one person whose brand and voice are nothing like your own probably won't work for you and you won't enjoy doing it because it doesn't feel right. This is why I love creating frameworks. So teaching someone your framework to then take their expertise and use the framework to massage out and craft what they need to build, okay? And again, just to reiterate a point because I haven't said it 82 times this episode is learning to write well for the web is the best thing you can do for your business. All right. So here are a few things I want to leave you with. Where are we at? Yeah, this is a long one, you guys. I'm sorry. I just have gone off script too much. All right. So someone has to go first. Progress and innovation require someone to go first. Someone needs to take the first step. Your audience is truly waiting for your unique voice and perspective. Don't worry about what it looks like, what it sounds like, all of those things. You will get better over time. And, you know, if only everybody did see everything when we hit publish, but the likelihood of everybody consuming it is minimal, okay? Breaking new ground doesn't have to be on a massive scale. And you'll know, you'll start getting those intuitive hits and those nudges that I'm onto something. You'll know it. and start embracing the iterative process. I have fallen in love with this idea lately. It's nothing new, but I finally get it. You know, the nature of creating is an iterative process. The first attempt doesn't have to be perfect. Each iteration is a step towards improving and finding your audience. So, for example, my Everything is Content workshop, I'm going to keep running it live. And then I'm going to see if I can get friends to host me for a workshop and start putting it in front of more and more people. I'll refine the message. I'll refine the examples. I'll refine the process of using, I created a custom GPT for Everything is Content. So I will get a more refined process each time I iterate. Community and collaboration. Ooh, sorry. A little pause for a water break. As the saying goes, no man or woman, right, is an island. Communities and collaboration provide invaluable feedback. They also provide encouragement and support that help us overcome our biases and fears. It doesn't have to be a formal community. I have two calls. One is every week with Jason Resnick. And then I have two friends, Liz and Tess, that we do every other week. It's like our own little mini mastermind. We share our goals. We share what we're working on. We ask for questions. We get feedback. So whatever that looks like for you, it can be formal. It can be informal. But make sure you are surrounding yourself with like-minded people who will support you and be honest with you. Not harsh, but just honest, right? Because your success should be as important to them as their own success. You know what I mean? I mean, that's maybe pushing it, but you get my point. But you know, it's just, I don't know, you guys, this, oh wait, I totally skipped the last one. I'm sorry. I was scrolling too much. But imperfect action over perfection. And it might sound harsh, but claiming that you're not hitting publish because you're a perfectionist is an excuse. Perfectionism is just an excuse. And at some point you have to decide what your good enough is and deploy it and launch it. And then, i.e., you iterate, right? It's how you keep yourself small. It's how you keep yourself from stepping up and really serving the people you want to help. Starting is always more important than waiting for the perfect moment or idea or product and getting it right. The creator economy. And again, guys, when I say creator economy, I'm talking about content creators, coaches, course creators, agencies, entrepreneurs, okay? Not SaaS or any sort of corporate creator, really. But it's just starting to feel like a lot of sameness. And that also happens when you stay in the same circles and you don't start expanding. It kind of reminds me of home decor trends, which, by the way, I've seen a lot of pushback lately. I mean, the idea that we're supposed to decorate our homes for resale value, future resale value. I mean, I get it if you bought a home that you're going to renovate and want to flip within a year or two. That, totally different story. But if you're like, this, I love this house. We want to be here for a long time. It may or may not be a forever home. Make it yours. Make it yours, right? I mean, why wouldn't you make it feel like you? I'm not kidding you guys. Before I ever moved to Costa Rica, the house that I sold in Brentwood, which was like in 2016, my bedroom, the walls were like this bright royal blue. The duvet cover, oh, I love this duvet. It was a beautiful Pottery Barn. And if anybody knows where to find old Pottery Barn stuff, because this would look cute in a room in Costa Rica. But it was white with bright colors, primary colors of more tropical type leaves, birds kind of thing. And then I had beach pictures and my room is my oasis. And I didn't care. So when the people who bought the house, I knew they were going to do a bunch of stuff to it anyways. That's fine. But make it your space. The same needs to be said about your business. It needs to feel like you. It was kind of like, I mean, I'm glad that the gray and white decor is going away. And at the same time, if you did your house in that, love it. You know, I mean, if you don't, change it. But I mean, as we grew up, my parents didn't redecorate the house every time there's a new trend coming out. It's just, oh, it's exhausting. Anyway, but the house I had in Boise was all the gray and white. And it was like, oh my God, I feel a little bit like I'm in prison. So I got removable wallpaper, which is the best invention ever for my office to add some color. But again, your business needs to feel like you. Personalize it. Use language that resonates with you. Learn how to write well, create copy, and use things that make you happy, right? So when I relaunched my website, if you haven't gone to it, it's Cadence. I love Cadence. And I've decided, you know what? All the photos on the site are going to be Costa Rica. And because I'm on this mission to simplify and create more ease in my business and my life while scaling, I think I might add a sloth. There's a ease about a sloth, right? They're slow. And it's also Costa Rica. I don't care if it makes sense to anybody. I'm going to bring a sloth in. You know, it is important, of course, to know who we're talking to and the problems we solve for them. Put aside some of the principles of direct marketing and copywriting for just a hot minute. You need to be willing to listen to what feels right to you. As a little disclaimer, remember that it may take time, right, to find what feels right. But be careful not to use that as an excuse for not starting. Clarity will always come through doing the work. I've known too many people that are like waiting for this lightning bolt to come and strike them down with the million-dollar idea. I'm sure that's happened for some people. Take J.K. Rowling, right? I'm a Potter fan. So she had an idea, but boy, did she have challenges to get the first book published, right? So you have to be willing to claim and own and create the business that you want in your voice in a way that serves your right audience, you know, but don't use these things as an excuse for not creating, because the thing is, if you're not publishing at all, you're not driving traffic. You have to be publishing. We have to drive traffic. And if you're a service business and everything comes through referrals, more power to you, right? You've been in business a long time. That's great. And maybe you're winding down. So it's not a judgment, but if you're newer, new-ish, you want to scale, you need traffic online. So that's either paid traffic or content. And in a perfect world, it's both, right? But regardless of what market or niche or industry you're in, you're going to need traffic, okay? Ideally, you can find a combination of both that works for you, like I said. But either way, no matter what it is, don't be afraid to go first. Maybe you're the first person in your family that decides, I'm going to write on the web. I'm going to launch a YouTube channel. I'm going to be a podcaster. I'm going to start selling courses. I'm going to be a coach. I don't care. I'm going to blow up an agency, right? Meaning grow, blow up. We really, really need new voices and new perspectives all the time. So don't let knowledge bias or imposter syndrome get in your way. Be the one to go first. Take that risk. You know, you'll know when it feels right to take a bigger risk, right? Vulnerability, I tell everybody, step into it. Baby step. I mean, you know, baby step your way into it. It gets easier and easier each time. But really, like, don't wait for someone else to give you permission. Don't wait for someone else to show you the way. You can do this. Just start. Anyways, all right, that is it. The dog needs to go outside now, so we're going to wrap this up. I love you guys tons. As always, thank you for listening. If you've not left a review in Apple Podcasts, I would love it. It would mean the world to me. And if you are not on my email list, go ahead and go to kimdoyle.com/the-spark. I think the spark would also bring you there as well. Because yeah, I'm on a roll, guys, and I'm having a ton of fun. I don't know, for lack of a better word, it feels like I'm back. That's the best way I can describe it, but with a deeper confidence and wisdom. Yeah. And I'm going to take that to the bank. So anyways, that was goofy, but run with it. Okay. As always, guys, thanks for listening. Have a wonderful morning, afternoon, or evening, and I will catch you next week.